find the things that you want.
Still need to be plugged in here. I'm not plugged in. I have an Indian plug in my desk. I have dry cord here. Near the bed.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Anucheta number 80. So far it's been discussed that Brahman is most fully manifested in the personality of Godhead. It's the same one reality, just understood and designated in two different ways. The reality is always complete, but various persons have different capacities to fully or unfully, not fully, realize that reality. Okay. Let's read 80.3 again, because it introduces these six verses. Question by Narada and answer by Vyasadeva. No, I'm sorry. Yeah, Narada is asking a question of his disciple, and Vyasadeva replied. Tadetara vipretya pratamam drishti tarat miena tadabhivyakti tarat miyampa tas mahapuranari avirbhava karana vyam prashnotara vyam pratipadyate shadvihi. Meaning to express this, the gradation of the reality's manifestations is first established in terms of the gradation of vision. By a question and answer, which resulted in the appearance of this greatest of Puranas, and this was spoken in six verses.
Sri Narada Vacha Jigyasitam Aditam Cha Ramayam Tat Sanatana Tatapi Shochas Yat Manam Apritarta Iva Prabhu.
Narada said, you have inquired into the eternal reality, Brahman, and have realized it. But still you are lamenting for yourself, my dear Prabhu, as if your life was a failure. Vyasa responds,
Sri Vyasa uvacha tvam paryatan arka eva prulokim antascharo vayurivatma sakshi paravare pramani dharmato vratai snatasya menyuna malapichakshva.
Sri Vyas said, like the sun, your goodness can travel everywhere in the three worlds. And like the air, you can penetrate the internal region of every one. As such, you are as good as the all-pervading super soul.
Please therefore find out the deficiency in me. Despite my being absorbed in transcendence, both the superior and inferior form, by following religious principles and strict vows. Okay. Brahman, in its two forms, Parta and Avrata, I think we can understand that as the Supreme Lord's spiritual existence and his material creation. Okay, now, we already discussed this, so I just read it to review. I see a small editing change I have to make here. Just give me a minute. And then we move on to 80.4, which we're up to.
Yes, do I need to adjust the table?
What's that?
Do I need to adjust the table?
Well, we can. No, it's okay the way it is. It's okay. 80.4. Narada continues. Sri Narada Vacha Bhavata Nudita Praya Yasho Bhagavato Malam Yena eva sauna tushita manyeta darshanam kilam. Sri Narada said, you have not actually broadcast the sublime and spotless glories of the personality of Godhead. That philosophy which does not satisfy the Lord is considered worthless. Naishkarmya napiyachuta bhavarjitam Nashobate gena malam niranjanam Kutak punap shashwara badramishware Nacharpitam karma yadapyakaranam. Realization of the truth beyond material work, even though free from all material affinity, does not look well if devoid of a conception of the infallible personality of Godhead. What then is the use of fruitive activities, even obligatory ones, if they are not utilized for the devotional service of the Lord? After all, they are naturally painful from the very beginning and transient by nature. Namo, these verses are from, verses are being skipped over. It's in order, but there are verses in between that are not quoted. Namo Bhagavate Tubhyam Vasudevaya Dhimahi Pradyumnaya Nirudhaya Namak Sankarshanaya Cha Iti Murtya Vidhanena Mantra Murti Mamurtikam Yajate Yajna Purusham Sasamyan Darshanak Puman. Let us fix our intelligence by offering obeisances unto you, O personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, obeisances also to Pradyumna, Anirudha, and Sankarsana. He sees with complete vision, who thus worships in the form of transcendental sound representation, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, who has no material form. Okay, no commentary here. But Jiva Goswami now will analyze these six verses, or say something about them. Shloka api bahubi samishra api avistataratvaya jyotiti arta pratyayaya cha samshipyaiva samudvitaha. Although these verses occur with several others in between them, for brevity's sake, we have put them together for citing them here so that their meaning can be quickly appreciated. Okay. Kramen arto yata gigasitam iti. This meaning is as follows, taking the verses one at a time, starting with the one that begins gigasitam. That's Narada asking or inquiring from Vyasa. Tikacha, the commentary on this verse says as follows. That's Sridhar Swami's commentary. Yat sanatanam nityam param brahma tancha tvaya gigasitam vicharitam aditam odigatam praptam chetyardaha. commentary says, you have inquired into, or in other words, you've investigated, that unchanging, or let's say eternal, Supreme Brahman, and have completely, something's wrong here, completed your study of it. That means you have understood it and achieved it. Okay? Understand Brahman is one thing. That's the fruit of study. But then also you should achieve Brahman. Establish your connection with Brahman. But still you are lamenting. Oh, I didn't read the English. It says good. Tatapi shochasi. Kim tat kim artam iti sheshaha. Iti esha. Iti esha is the tag, the mark, the end of the quotation of Shri Goswami's commentary. All that Jiva Goswami will say is tika, and then at the end, iti esha, that's it. That's the tika. And we understand that that's a formula for introducing a direct quote from Shri Goswami. But still you are lamenting. The implied completion of this sentence is, or this idea is, what is the reason for this? So it's a question. You are lamenting, but it's an implied question. Why are you lamenting? You shouldn't be. Okay, Twam iti. Next verse. Twam paryantan arka. That's Narada's, Vyasati has implied that you are wandering the three worlds like the sun. Twam iti, the verse beginning Twam. Twam arka eva trilokim paryatam. Tata Vaishnava yoga balam shena chaprano vayuriva sarva praninam antaschara sun. Atmanam sarve sham eva sakshi. Bahir antarvidigya. What is it in the Sanskrit? Atmasakshi. But that's glossed by Shri Goswami as Atmanam Sarvesham. Atmasakshi means, according to Sridhar, means witness of all the Atmas, all the souls. That's not Super Soul, that's Narada Muni. As empowered representative of Super Soul, he can see inside everyone's heart by his divine insight. Krishna gives him the intelligence to see inside anybody's heart. It's not that Narada or his representative is like the Super Soul and sees simultaneously all the living entities and sees through all of their consciousness. That's God's job to do that. But an empowered devotee of God can see in the heart of every jiva he happens to meet. It's like the astrologers who read the Bhrigu Samhita, which is supposed to have everybody's chart in it. And they may have a copy of the book in their office, but it doesn't have billions of pages or an infinite number of pages. It just happens to have all the charts of all the people who ever walk into his office. Supposedly. So like that, the living entity who is empowered representative of the Super Soul, he can see in the heart of anybody he happens to meet, but not that he sees every corner of the universe, every soul. He's not God. Okay. The verse beginning, Twam, you are wandering the three worlds like the sun. And by a part of the power of your Vaishnava Yoga, Jiva Goswami uses the term Vaishnava Yoga, you pass within all living beings like the air of life. As the witness of the living souls of everyone, aware of their activities, external and internal. Atap pare brahmani dharmato yogena nishnatasya. Therefore, you yourself...
No?
Yes, therefore you yourself...
Oh, I didn't... I see. Okay. The sentence continues with a verse in the middle of it. Let me read the whole sentence.
Atak pare brahmani dharmato yogena nishtatasya taduktam yagya valkena idya chara daya himsa dana swadhyaya karmanam ayam hi paramo labo yod yoginatma darshanam iti avare cha brahmani vedakye vritais swadhyaya niyamayam nishnatasyapi mealam atyardam yannam yunam tatsvayameva vichakshva vitarkaya. So when a commentary quotes a verse in the middle of a sentence, it makes it difficult to translate without breaking it up into smaller sentences. Especially if it's at the beginning or the end, it's still good to break it, especially if a verse is quoted in the middle of a sentence. I wouldn't try to make just one sentence out of it in English. It would be very hard to follow. Let's see how I did it here. Actually, I did do it as one sentence. Let's see if it works. Therefore, you should yourself please tell me, please surmise, what is the great discrepancy in me, who knows fully the Supreme Brahman by virtue of my religious principles, my discipline, as is stated by Yajnavalkya. The supreme gain of worship, good behavior, compassion, nonviolence, charity, Vedic study, and ritual duties is that one's discipline leads to realization of the self. That is Yajnavalkya talking. And, who knows fully the Supreme Brahman by virtue of my religious principles, and who also knows fully the lesser Brahman called the Vedas by virtue of my vows, my regulative principles of study. Now, what's going on here? Paravare brahmani dharmato vratai snatasya. I'm fully absorbed in superior and inferior Brahman. Superior Brahman is God. Inferior Brahman is Shabda Brahman, the manifestation of God in sound in the Vedas. So Vyasadeva is a devotee, and he's also greatest authority, greatest scholar of the Vedas. Vedavid, the knower of the Vedas. So he's devoted. What is it? Shrotriya Brahmanishna. Or Shabde Pareja Nishnata. Brahman Upa Shamashraya. From 11th canto, Krishna tells Uddhava, you should approach a guru who is Nishnata. Same word used here, Nishnata, Snatasya. Well, Nishnata. One who is fully absorbed in Shabde Pareja Brahmani. In Brahman, which is sound Brahman, the Vedas, and the superior Brahman, supreme Brahman, God. So, in other words, Narada is being acknowledged by Vyas as the perfect guru. You should be able to answer my doubt. Okay, I'll read the commentaries, just one paragraph. As Sridhar Swami explains in his commentary, Vyasadeva not only seriously studied Brahman, he was successful to the point of direct realization in his heart. Still he felt dissatisfied. So Vyasadeva had studied the Vedas, he had meditated, actually performed proper meditation on Brahman, which many attempt, but very few are successful in actually realizing Brahman in the heart. He didn't just theoretically study the Upanishads, he realized in his heart the goal of the Upanishads. And then he presented all the Vedas and the Upanishads and the Vedanta Sutra and Mahabharata for the benefit of the human society. He had accomplished all of that, and still he felt dissatisfied. Continuing, he was confident that his guru would be able to discern the reason, because he had seen the whole universe, and because he could see inside Vyasa's mind. Yajnavalkya is an authority of the Dharma Shastras and also speaks as an authority in the Upanishads. According to him, self-realization is the perfection of all study and discipline. Even though Vyas is the best example among the great sages of such success, he still needed to advance further in God consciousness and then teach this art to others. Now, where's that quote from Yajnavalkya from? No, we don't have the reference for it, sorry. Okay, any questions? I mean, it's totally confusing or totally understood. Okay. I'll just move on. Yeah. Okay, it's F. Confusing. Yes. Well, yeah, but the Vedas also have their material. They can be seen as if they're material. Let's say they reflect on the material energy. And therefore, Krishna said, Trigunya Vishaya Veda. The Vedas deal with the three modes, and you should be disinterested in the three modes. That sounds like a rejection of the Vedas. But, and elsewhere in the Gita, Krishna promotes the Vedas. You know, and relies on the authority of the Vedas himself. But there's a material side. Or at least, see, people, when the Vedas are a desire tree. They reflect whatever's in your heart. If you're material, you'll see material things in the Vedas. That's what's inferior, is really the Karmakanda and the Gyanakanda. These are the inferior, just like Brahman, impersonal Brahman is an inferior, apparently inferior aspect of the Supreme Truth. Although there's no difference, but the difference is in the vision. Same thing with the Vedas. Material people look at the Vedas and what they see is material, even though the Vedas aren't material. That's the inferior aspect. That's how the Vedas seem to be separate from the Supreme Person. They're really not separate, but in our eyes they become separate. The Vedas become something material in our eyes. Yes, and if you go to the wrong person, you'll get a material vision. The same way that Brahman is inferior aspect of Bhagavan. It's just imperfect realization. When the Vedas are imperfectly realized, then you have something inferior. The difference is that Brahman is still purely spiritual. But when the Vedas become misunderstood, they actually become tainted by the three modes. At least our eyes, let's say that our vision becomes tainted by the three modes. And what we see in the Vedas is Karmakanda and Gyanakanda, especially Karmakanda. But even Gyanakanda is impersonal, so it's inferior. What's impersonal in the Gyanakanda is inferior. And what's materialistic in the Karmakanda is inferior. But that's really an inferior vision. It's not inferior, it's not anything imperfect in the Vedas themselves. It's all the way we look at the Vedas. But the Vedas have a way of reflecting. The Vedas communicate to us according to our mentality. If we have a material mentality, the Vedas will communicate to us in material terms.
Like,
we can even say non-different from. Shabda Brahman, they're the manifestation of the absolute truth in sound.
Okay.
It's like the Lord, Supreme Lord, has his material energies.
Yeah.
They're not different from him.
Yeah.
So the Vedas can also appear material.
Is it saying like from Krishna's point of view, there is no material or spiritual energy?
Or even from the point of view of a empowered living entity who can see, even in the so-called Jnana Kanda, Karma Kanda, he can see Krishna on every page of the Vedas if he has empowered vision. But it's not obvious. It's not obvious to ordinary eyes how Krishna is glorified in all the Vedas, on every page of the Vedas. It's not obvious to us.
So then Narada Muni is saying?
Yes. This is Vyas saying Narada that, oh Guru, you're my Guru, you are fully absorbed in both the superior and the inferior aspects of Brahma.
But how this can be
Because Narada can also speak as an authority on material topics. Just like in the last chapters of the seventh canto, Narada is giving instructions on Varnashram. That's technically material. He doesn't say much. He does it all in a few chapters, and half of the chapters are just Krishna consciousness. You know, it's really not pure Varnashram. Swayambhu Manu writes 20 chapters of, and that's just a condensation. The original, what Manu spoke, was condensed by Bhrigumuni into the Manu Smriti. 20 chapters. And it's all material. But Swayambhu Manu is a pure devotee. But he's writing for a material audience, so he speaks material things. So the Vedas will speak material things to us if the audience is material. It's not like the Vedas will send somebody away and give them nothing. The Vedas will give something material to those who want something material.
You mentioned that according to the person's mentality, the Vedas reveal themselves. So then my question is, if someone who is not aware of the ritual, but he's a sincere seeker, and he's a materialist at that point of time when he takes to the Vedas, then he can be misguided, and then we cannot hold him responsible. Like someone may become a Mayavadi because he may not have that tendency, but he may have met a person who is a Mayavadi, and out of his ignorance, he may get that conviction, okay, this is the highest truth.
Yes.
So then how can he be made pure love of God?
That was actually how Vyasa criticized, Narada criticized Vyasadeva, that it's going to be your fault if ignorant people stay attached to the Karma Kanda and the Jnana Kanda. You had better present Srimad Bhagavatam to get off the hook. So once Bhagavatam is presented, then it's our fault if we don't accept it. Before the Bhagavatam was available, we can't be blamed for remaining materialists. But once the Bhagavatam is presented, and especially if it's being preached all over the world, and everybody's trying, every street corner, someone's trying to sell you a copy of the Bhagavatam, then you have no excuse. If the devotees are out there distributing Srimad Bhagavatam, on the street corners, on the internet, and people can't get away from it, on the television, nobody's innocent anymore. Then everybody has the opportunity to take Bhagavatam. If they don't do it, it's their fault of being materialists.
Yeah. So then what is happening when a person becomes a devotee, accepts Krishna consciousness, someone rejects it, even though it was something? What is the deciding
point? Lack of sincerity, lack of honesty, complete lack of faith in the scriptural authority, lack of faith in God, lack of faith in the Shastra, lack of faith in the Vaishnavas, strong desire to remain material. As long as people want to remain material, Krishna won't force them not to. People have to become dissatisfied. Okay, you're not dissatisfied enough, we'll make things a lot worse. Krishna can arrange to make things worse and worse until people finally become dissatisfied. But as long as they're satisfied with material life, then they're not going to be forced to give it up.
But in India, we see that material life is not so good, but still people are not so much interested in God consciousness. So,
yes.
So does it mean that it has still become worse before they take to it?
It doesn't have to. See, India had all the spiritual assets and threw them away. So that is the great fault of India, that it threw away, it's throwing away its spiritual culture. And it's to be blamed for that. Yeah. Don't cry that you don't have any spiritual culture. Well, you threw it away. And now you're clamoring for material success. So the people in the West are more innocent. They didn't have that spiritual culture. But the people who had it threw it away, they're more blamable. And they're going to be more messed up. But they are already. That's why even though Indian people are intelligent and they have that spiritual culture, but because they rejected it, they're suffering like anything. The place is a mess. It used to be the most advanced country in the world, materially also. Now it isn't. Yeah. I don't know which Rishi cursed India, but somebody did. Yeah. I don't know the history. Yes.
He said that he believed that he gave Vedas or Vedic knowledge for people in general, and he himself said he studied them and wrote them, and he realized Vedas. But it is said that, now that Ganesh is aware of Hama Vidya, that the purpose of Vedas is to understand Krishna, but it is said that he understood only Brahma. So what was the problem with Brahma? He should have.
You say that Vyasa himself was not a devotee? That's not, see, I don't think that's true, I'm not sure, but Narada doesn't tell Vyasa the fault with you is that you're not a devotee. He says the fault with you is that you didn't encourage others to become devotees. Right? I mean, that you didn't present Krishna. It's not that you don't know Krishna, or you're not devoted to Krishna. That wasn't the criticism. If Vyasa was a materialist, Narada would have criticized him for that. It's not that Narada is embarrassed or too shy to criticize someone for being a materialist. See how he talked to Prichiti Bargu and other materialists. He talks very frankly to them. So he would, if Vyasadeva was a non-devotee, Narada would have very frankly criticized him for that, but he doesn't. So it's not that he's not a devotee. Not that he's lacking Krishna consciousness, but he hasn't shared his Krishna consciousness. That's the fault. Because what? I'm sorry. Can I just elaborate a little bit on that? The instruction is not, you better go get some training, and become somebody's brahmachari and become a devotee. He didn't instruct that. He instructed you sit down and meditate, and Krishna will appear in your heart, and he'll reveal everything to you, and the Bhagavatam will be revealed to you. That means that Vyasadeva was already an advanced devotee. The guru wouldn't have told him to sit down and meditate, Krishna will appear to you, if the disciple wasn't already advanced in Krishna consciousness. Okay.
But my question is about what was his previous level of understanding? Because it was like the very first of the commentary, he says that as Chidarasana explains in his commentary, Sadeva not only seriously studied Brahma, he was successful to the point of direct realization of his heart.
Yeah, but I don't think that was just impersonal realization. And I just take the evidence of that he gave very simple instruction. Just like if temple commander tells the cook, we need a feast, make sweet rice, halava, pakoras, and this and that. He doesn't have to tell the recipes to the cook. The cook already knows. So therefore the temple commander only has to give very brief instructions. So Narada is giving very brief instructions to Vyasadeva, but Vyasadeva already knows these things. He knows how to meditate on Krishna and realize it in the heart. He just says, sit down one morning and do it, that's all. So it's obvious that Vyasadeva was already Krishna conscious.
So still, I don't understand.
Yeah.
What was his previous level of understanding?
When previous?
He completely understood.
No, but I'm saying
I'm saying previous. Not that, you know, the moment that Vyasadeva Narada appeared, then he became Krishna conscious. He must have been Krishna conscious already from before. So previously, at least in this lifetime, he must have been fully Krishna conscious. That's how he describes his previous life in the sixth chapter, that he became Krishna conscious, he developed bhakti, and then he left that body and took his new Narada body. From his previous life, he was already fully Krishna conscious. Oh, that's Narada, I'm sorry, Vyasadeva. Yeah. No, I think I think the evidence is there that Vyasadeva, I'm sorry, I mixed up Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva was not only impersonally realized, he must have also been fully Krishna conscious. He's an avatar anyway. So I don't think he was lacking Krishna consciousness. But he just got too busy presenting all this other stuff and neglected to present Krishna consciousness. I mean, you know, for evidence, we could look at all the things Vyasadeva said and did, as recorded in the Puranas and Mahabharata, and you can see there's a lot of evidence that he was very Krishna conscious all along, his whole life.
So maybe it was for our purpose to show an example that in order to understand Krishna, not to
The way I see what's happening here is that the criticism is failing to preach. The Vyasadeva was a devotee, but he wasn't preaching it enough. You know, you have the knowledge, you have the realization, you have the devotion, and you're not sharing it with everybody else. You're giving them material things that they want, because they're foolish, they want material things. And you're giving it to them, and you're not giving them pure Krishna consciousness. That's the criticism. Not that you are Krishna conscious, but you aren't sharing your Krishna consciousness. Anyway, that's the way I see it. What's happening here?
Still looks like that he has to restrain from all material activity, whatever he has been before attention, just to see and meditate to Krishna. Then Krishna will see that he will share the Lord.
I don't think he has to go to a thorough sadhana. I don't see, it doesn't say that Vyasadeva had to meditate 60,000 years. It says he sat down one good morning, the sun rose, and Vyasadeva sat down and meditated. Like he did it in a few hours, or 1 hour, he did his whole meditation. So that's not that he has to start from scratch to become Krishna conscious. He already was. He just sat down and in 15 minutes he saw what he had to see. You know, one fine morning, the sun rose, as the sun was rising, Vyasadeva sat down and meditated. He studied Brahman because that was his job, to present the Brahma Sutras.
So to
present the commentary, standard commentary on Upanishads, which seemed to talk mostly about Brahman rather than Bhagavan. But that doesn't mean he only realized Brahman, but he had a special assignment to give the textbook on Brahman realization, Brahma Sutras. If somebody teaches arithmetic, it doesn't mean he hasn't studied higher mathematics. You know, he may know many things, but he's has a job teaching, you know, third graders arithmetic.
Like you say that the royal Brahman has Brahman.
Yeah.
Srimad Bhagavatam is not different from the Vedas.
But it's more than but Srimad Bhagavatam is not different from the higher Brahman. Bhagavatam is not different from Bhagavan. So it's not different from the Vedas, but you can say it's more than the Vedas, because it's not manifestation just of Brahman, but of Bhagavan.
Mm-hmm.
Bhagavatam is complete. The Bhagavatam is more complete than other parts of the Vedas.
If we take the Vedas royal Brahman in the terms of people saying that Ashtambakan, Gyanakan, so even Bhagavatam also, certain things like, you know, if you do this, you get long life, if you do this, you get this, you get
in
that.
In Bhagavatam?
So, yeah, there are some Phalashrutis are like that. So if people see that in their viewpoint, so it, you can you say that Bhagavatam also is movement? Like, I mean, this argument.
That's a misunderstanding.
But even Vedas are also people are misunderstanding. Otherwise,
there are some things that Shukadev says that could confuse materialists. It's like a covering on the Bhagavatam. Like, you know, we sell the Bhagavatams, they may be shrink-wrapped in plastic. It doesn't mean the Bhagavatam is made out of plastic, but there's a plastic wrapper on it to keep it clean. Like that, there are some things that Shukadev says just to keep the materialists and impersonalists from sticking their nose too far into it, to send them away with some materialistic or impersonal understanding. That whole fifth chapter of this 12th canto, the last instructions that Shukadev give. If you read it, it sounds completely impersonal. And Shukadev said it intentionally to fool the impersonalists. Now you've read the whole 12 cantos, and here's your test. You know, I'm going to say a bunch of impersonal things. Do you actually believe that's the message of the Bhagavatam? If you are, okay, that's your understanding. Yes, you're left with that. It's a test. And the impersonalists will fail it, even after reading 12 cantos. That's intentional. It's yoga maya to keep out those who are unfit.
Yeah, so my question is, so if that is the case, the Vedas are also like Madhvacharya quotes Adhyacham, Dejam, Mundhyacham, Harisarva, Pagiyate.
Yes.
The Vedas are also discussing about Krishna only, but there is a problem with the audience. So how can we say the Vedas are loyal Brahman? If that is the case, if people say Bhagavatam also, then it's not a part of the Vedas or the Bhagavatam.
Well, okay, I don't say that. The Vedas say that. The Mundaka Upanishad says that. There are two vidyas, the higher vidya and the lower vidya. And the lower vidya is the Rig Veda, Sama Veda, Atharva Veda, Yajur Veda, and so on. That's the Upanishads, the Vedas themselves saying that. So we have to just accept that somehow the Vedas are the lower Brahma. But it is because 99.99% of the people, whoever go near the Vedas, see it as Karmakanda and Gyanakanda. And only a small fraction of people can see the bhakti essence in the Vedas. There are a small portion of the text that actually is openly teaching pure bhakti, but only a few people who are aware of it or take that part important. And the rest of it actually is deep underneath hidden the bhakti message, but hardly anybody can find it. And so, do Upanishads say that the Vedas are, you know, the apara jnana? And Krishna says it too in the first a few places in the Gita. So we have to just accept that and try to understand what that means.
Yeah. The Upanishad says Rig Vedas and all these four Vedas are loyal to Brahman, but I don't understand because.
Yes?
So the Upanishad says all other four Vedas are loyal to Brahman, but they are part of the four Vedas. Upanishads. What does that mean?
I'm sorry, all the four Vedas are what?
You said the Upanishads are telling that Rig Veda and.
This is the apara. Well, yeah.
Yeah, right.
The Mundaka Upanishad says that. But it doesn't. We shouldn't take it too literally. It says the higher knowledge, the higher vidya, higher education is that by which you understand the infallible, akshara. And the lower knowledge is the Rig Veda and so on. Now that doesn't mean the Rig Veda is material. It means that Rig Veda as ordinarily understood. Ordinary Vedic education, what you get in the normal Brahmin Gurukula. You know, just memorize the Vedas, recite them, and study Sayana's commentary or somebody's commentary. That's materialistic understanding of the Vedas. That's what most people get who study the Vedas. So that's what the Mundaka Upanishad means when it says the Rig Veda is the inferior knowledge. That means Rig Veda as it is ordinarily understood. The Veda itself is not inferior.
Yeah. So
neither is Brahman inferior to Bhagavan because it's not different. But the way Brahman is normally understood by impersonalists, that's inferior.
Yeah, so that means, is it like we heard one logic in the grammar class that, and I forgot the Sanskrit,
yes,
that if there are 30 Virastas are walking, one Brahmacharya is walking, we say the Virastas are coming. So That's why, as an assumption, it says Rig Veda is Aparamitya, even though Upanishads are part of the Rig Vedas also.
Yes, you can explain it like that, yes.
But
Vyasa Muni tells us that every single mantra in the Vedas can be understood on three different levels. Adibhautik, Adidaivik, and Adiatmik. So there's a materialistic or just physical understanding. There's an understanding in terms of the demigods and their powers. And there's an understanding in terms of pure spirit that can be found in every mantra of the Vedas. So nothing is just material in the Vedas. But you have to dig very deep to find the spiritual essence in most of the mantras.
Is it three levels applicable to Bhagavatam also?
Is which?
Is this three levels applicable to Bhagavatam also?
I don't know, because Bhagavatam claims that it doesn't allow anything material. So someone sees material instructions in the Bhagavatam. You know, the Bhagavatam is a secret code. You know, actually, if you interpret the Bhagavatam, you can see predictions of the future. You know, World War III is predicted and the stock market crash is predicted in the Bhagavatam. They say that about the Bible. About the Old Testament, you know, they find secret codes. So some speculator may find some secret codes in the Bhagavatam that's predicting World War III or something. That's a wrong interpretation. The Bhagavatam rejects that business, any material business. So people who read material business into the Bhagavatam, they're misreading.
Yeah.
Okay. And now it's time to stop. So. That's okay. We just have to finish the 101 other chains by the end of April. So, okay, so I'll stop here. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Mom.